This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. This is Cashing Out on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Dustin Sweetelson here, you there. Appreciate you making us a part of your night. However you may be tuning in, it's Cashing Out, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. You can always check us out, Sirius XM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, and radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. It's a big week in college football. We've got playoff games. We've got bowl games all over the place with teams you've actually watched before. It's a beautiful thing. And the bowl season's been dicey for me so far. I've been really, really right and really, really wrong and not a lot in the middle when it comes to my picks in bowl season. To help us find some sharper wagers, we're going to go to the Progressive guest line. Welcome in our buddy Wes Reynolds, VSiN contributor, one of the sharpest people on the planet, at WesReynolds1 on X. And he joins us now in the Progressive guest line. So talk to me, Wes. Before we get into the games you like this week, how's your bowl season going? Is there anything that jumps out to you for your analysis that's making sense? Or is it just kind of like, who's in, who's out? Do they have a quarterback or not? And hope for the best.
A little bit of the latter. It's actually gone okay. So I'm on the plus side. But ironically enough, it seems like the worse of the number I get, the better I do on the game. Because, you know, I've got 5 points, the worst of it on Toledo. They cover. And then the Aztecs signed up for 60. They get in the back door when I'm taking 3.5, thinking, oh, man, Mestemaker and all these guys aren't going to play. And then they're ruled in. Then it goes to 7.5 and somehow got very fortunate with that. So, you know, that's bowl season. You don't want to overanalyze, or if you're not doing as great, you don't want to beat yourself up, because there's a lot of randomness involved in these things, as you know.
Yeah, and the game's coming up on Tuesday here. We've got the Music City Bowl, the Alamo Bowl, the ReliaQuest Bowl. That's Wednesday, the ReliaQuest Bowl. I'm missing one more. What was it? Oh, the Independence Bowl. Like, two of these games feature some big programs, but you don't know what they're going to look like with so many guys preparing for the draft, the portal, who's going to play quarterback. So let's begin with the Music City Bowl. Tennessee laying 3.5. The total is 61.5. Looks like Luke Altmyer is going to play quarterback for Illinois. Did you think about doing anything with the Music City Bowl?
Lean Illinois a little bit. Ironically enough, Illinois practiced in Vanderbilt's facility down there in Nashville. Tennessee wouldn't do that. They're not going to practice in a rival's facility. So Brett Bielema and Illinois were happy to do that and praise Vanderbilt up and down. Lean a little bit Illinois here, even though some money's come back on Tennessee. This did get down to like 2.5 and now up to 3.5. Smalling Illinois, we might get a little happy action fun time here. It would not surprise me, barring the weather, to see this be a high scoring game.
Yeah, the total 61.5. I thought about the over because you look at Tennessee, they're missing everyone who matters. Two corners that are going to be in the NFL, although McCoy never played this season. But and then on the other side, Xavier Scott, the safety for Illinois, is not going to play in this one. He's transferring. There's some other guys not available as well. I do think the over makes some sense, but I took the 3.5 with Illinois in this game. I'm happy you said that. How about the Alamo Bowl? USC laying 6.5, totals 55.5. Quarterback's the story when it comes to this matchup. Jaden Maiava re-signed with USC, which is a weird thing to say about a college quarterback. So he's going to play. And Josh Hoover, the TCU quarterback, is transferring out of town. I laid 6.5 with USC. Did you think about anything here?
Thought about maybe a little TCU, but because USC, by the way, down their receivers, down Makai Lemon, who is obviously opted out, and also without Jacoby Lane, but TCU without receivers too, without Jordan Bailey, who is transferred. And then, of course, Josh Hoover is going to be in demand. My alma mater, I think, in the mix there. We'll see how it is. The portal doesn't even open up, by the way, till January 2nd, so we shall see. Maybe a small lean to TCU, but haven't done anything yet.
Yeah, Josh Hoover is about to get some money, man. He's about to have some generational wealth if he plays his cards right, because he can sling it. He looks like an NFL dude. Him, Mestemaker in the portal. If you want a Texas quarterback, you can go find one this offseason. Wes Reynolds is with us. He is a Hoosier. We'll talk about the Hoosiers and the Crimson Tide in just a moment here at WesReynolds1 on X. All of his picks up at VSiN.com/picks. All right, your Hoosiers, lane 7, taking on Alabama in the quarterfinals of the college football playoff in the Rose Bowl. Totals 48.5. You will be there. What would you look at in this matchup?
Yeah, leaving tomorrow morning. So excited to get there to Pasadena. I'll be at rainy Pasadena. They say it never rains in Southern California. I think Tony was telling some tales there because it is going to rain in Southern California and a plenty, which actually I think could favor Indiana a little bit because we know Alabama, they hadn't been able to run the ball all year. And Indiana, top 10 in terms of rushing offense, now has not run it as well against Ohio State or Oregon or Iowa, the better opponents. Like the per carry is down at around 3 yards on average, but they've run it well enough. I laid a little 6.5 here. I think the number is fair. I don't think you're really, you know, if you're getting on the good side of 7, I think that's good to take Alabama. If you're laying a little bit less of 7, I think it's good to take Indiana. I could see maybe the Hoosiers still starting slow here, like the first drive or two with the weather and then the fact that you've been off for a month. So are you going to have a little bit of jitters? Are you going to have the timing be just a little bit off? But I will say one thing just kind of holistically for the playoff. Last year, the best teams I felt, with the exception of Oregon, who was undefeated, maybe Georgia, the 5-8 teams were better as a whole than the 1-4 teams last year. Mm. And that's why you saw all those top 4 seeds get beat, because you had Arizona State and Boise State that got automatic buys because they won their conference championships. This year, I think the best 4 teams are the top 4 and then the 5 if you want to extend it to Oregon. So I don't know how many upsets, if any, we're going to get in this round.
Okay. Well, how about my Miami Hurricanes? 9.5-point dogs. They have a chance to at least keep it within that number. I don't think anyone anticipates them upsetting number 2 Ohio State. This game's on Wednesday, New Year's Eve, Cotton Bowl. Totals back down to 40.5. It opened around there, got up to 42.5. I took the under at that point. Now it's down to 40.5. And Ohio State's been bet up to a 9.5-point favorite. What do you like here?
Yeah, Miami in the under. If you could find 41 or better, I would still sponsor that. But I do like the Canes at +9.5. One of the things that's kind of a little bit of a mystery coming in here, Dustin, is the Ohio State offensive line, which was awesome all season. And then they played a real good defensive line in Indiana, and Indiana got 9 TFLs and 5 sacks on Saiyan and only allowed the Buckeyes 87 rushing yards. So can they hold up against a Miami pass rush that is obviously very good? They gave up a ton of pressure against Indiana too. I think 48.6 was the pressure rate when they only allowed about 25% through the regular season. If Miami can run the ball a little bit, move the chains, you know, how much are they going to let Carson Beck throw it? I felt they kind of tried to maybe hide Carson Beck a little bit, to be honest with you, in the Texas A&M game. It was all Fletcher. It was all Tony on that little end around there, but Miami got 7 sacks and 9 TFLs against A&M, and I think that defensive line might be enough to keep them in this game.
Yeah, I agree. I think the defense shows up. So you've got an Ohio State offense that has awesome weapons, but Julian Saiyan, it's not like he's putting up monster numbers against elite defenses. So we'll see how that plays out. Because of that, I think Miami makes it low scoring. If I was betting the side, I'd lean 9.5 with Miami, but I like the under. What about the Orange Bowl? Oregon's laying 2.5, taking on Texas Tech. Your total's 51.5. I got Tech 19-1 to win the title. I have a weird feeling this is where the rubber meets the road for them. I think Oregon might be a little bit different than they're used to seeing. Who do you like here?
I haven't done anything with the side, but I did bet the total a little bit under 52.5. Yeah. I just think with Texas Tech, number 1 in rush defense, and that defensive line is arguably the best in college football. Pros all over the place. Oregon's going to give them a challenge up front. And they've got some speed and can get in the space, but I think Oregon brings a better defensive effort here. I think maybe Dan Lanning got their attention where the game was on ice pretty much, but James Madison kept playing. They signed up for 60, and Oregon got real sloppy in the second half, I thought, defensively. So much better effort I expect from the Ducks, and then you know A&M's going to bring it, especially up front.
And then how about the Sugar Bowl? We've got a rematch in the SEC. Georgia laying 6.5, taking on Ole Miss. Your total is 55.5. Did you think about anything here?
Yeah, Dustin, I'm a little concerned that the line's not moving necessarily, because it seems like a lot of people like Georgia, and I'm one of them that like Georgia. I think that they're going to pull away from Mississippi State here, or Ole Miss here, I should say. Georgia, I talked about it all season that, you know, they're not as dominant up front on either side of the ball. That didn't resemble what they had, you know, 3 years ago when they won back-to-back CFPs. But then start the later part of the season, They didn't allow more than 81 rushing yards in the last four games, and the four opponents were Texas, Charlotte, Georgia Tech, and Alabama. So three real quality opponents there. And they only went 10 of 48 on third down against this Georgia defense. Georgia forced turnovers. They had nine sacks in those four games, and they started to kind of run the ball like you're used to seeing them run the ball a little bit. They've got a big play receiver now in Zachariah Branch, who's from Vegas, Bishop Gorman guy, now at from USC. And I think Georgia started to kind of figure it out in terms of how to run the ball. I don't know if Ole Miss can hold up front against these guys. I think they've got good adrenaline that carries them early on, but I think you get later into the second half, and I think the Bulldogs pull away.
Yeah, that's why I took Ole Miss plus the 3.5 in the first half. I think they're juiced up. They give them their best shot. Georgia maybe slow start, but second half, dogs pull away with the talent and the depth. Well, my friend, I hope you enjoy going to the Rose Bowl. I hope that I win my Alabama bet, but your Hoosiers advance, and you can go on a magical ride here because it's been fun to watch and ride alongside
with you. I'll take Indiana by seven. How's that? And we'll
I'll
move
take
on
it.
To Atlanta.
I'll take it. You have a great new year, man. I appreciate you doing this every single week. We'll chat again in 2026.
You do the same. Happy New Year, guys.
Awesome stuff from our guy, Wes Reynolds. I mean, as sharp a human being as there is on the planet. So I'm so appreciative of his time. Every time he joins us every week, we learn something. He's not just a wealth of knowledge with sports betting, more pop culture, TV sitcoms, music information than anyone you'll ever find at Wes Reynolds One on X. Hey, we talk all the time about making smart bets, and smart advertisers are doing the same with Mission Media. If you want real results, Mission Media connects your brand with audiences that actually engage, from premium podcasts and connected TV to data-driven digital campaigns. They deliver measurable ROI. Your brand deserves more than impressions. It deserves influence. Get started at vsin.com/advertise or email advertising@vsin.com. Did the Bills make the right decision going for two? We'll discuss next.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back at it on Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. You're locked into VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. While we were away, the final NBA game did go final. Portland beat Dallas 125-122. Just want to see what the number closed at here with Portland and Dallas. And Portland was laying 2.5, total of 232.5. We did cash our bet. Donovan Klingon over on his 26.5 points, rebounds, and assists. Finished the game with 18-11-1. By my math, that puts him at 29-30 PRA. Good day in the association. 5-2 with the player props up at VSiN.com/picks. Only 1-2 in the NFL. I guess 1-1 at VSiN.com/picks. One wasn't up there because it was a live bet. And then 1-1 in college hoops. So let's see. That puts the day at what? 7-4 at VSiN.com/picks in the end. 5, 6, 7. Yep. 7-2. No. Yeah. 7-4. 7-4. Not a bad day. Not a bad day at work here. We'll have more bets coming your way in the college football bowl games. We'll also add an NFL play or two before we get out of here in our VSiN Morning Bet segment later on this hour. But right now, it's time to bring you the best sound bites from earlier in the day on VSiN. If you're listening to me early in the morning, late at night, wherever you're doing so, odds are maybe you didn't hear Mitch and Paul in the afternoon, or you don't wake up early enough to hear VSiN by the Books with Dave and Jensen. Maybe it's Stormy and JVT you don't get to hear enough of. Don't worry, we got you covered. And we recap the top sound bites from the day right here on VSiN every single night with Night Bites.
At 4th-and-1 at midfield, you're up 11. The Raiders really can't do anything.
But they're one of the best teams in baseball.
Night Bites.
It's a Night Bites. Boom, boom. I'm going to write a theme song to this. I'm going to record it. We're going to lay it down. Night Bites. I don't know what rhymes with bites other than nights. So a bit limited there from a songwriting capacity. So we'll go with the clips. We'll just play and hear what people have to say here. Because listening to Money Moves earlier today, Stormy Bonantoni, JVT, you got them 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time right here on VSIN. They were talking about what went down in the Bills and Eagles game, where Buffalo came back in the fourth quarter, missed a PAT, which meant when they scored a second touchdown, instead of being able to go ahead of the Eagles 14-13, because of the missed PAT, they could either kick a PAT, tie it up at 13, or go for the win and the touch and the two-point conversion. And Sean McDermott opted to go for two. You look at social media and everyone's saying, hold on, why wouldn't you play for overtime? A lot of people then arguing on the other side of course, McDermott should have done what he did and gone for two. Where does JVT stand on that situation? Well, he laid it down earlier on Money Moves.
It's not, call me crazy, but I didn't mind that the Buffalo, no, call me crazy. The Bills should have gone for two. You're all idiots. That's what you're supposed to do. I saw tweets of like, they had the momentum. Momentum doesn't exist. You know what does? Scores, points. You got to go and get those to win the freaking games. Who cares that the Bills were part of the teams that got the new playoff rules, or excuse me, the postseason overtime rules instituted? Who cares about that? You got nothing going on. You need to win the game. Your offense has done bunk all game long. You know what you need? You need 2 yards. And guess what? You could have gotten them, like you said, if the throw was on target.
That's what I say. Like, the play was there. So yes. I like the call. I like going for the win in that moment.
Right. So it's not you don't mind. They should have. This is what you're supposed to do.
The Bills did the right thing.
There we go.
Okay, I love JVT. He's my guy. I don't disagree with him completely. I probably would have kicked the PAT and played for overtime because Jalen Hurts, by my math, had thrown for 0 yards in the second half. You had stifled this offense. So you had an opportunity with your defense adjusting properly, going up against one of the worst offenses in football right now with the Philadelphia Eagles. And then you have Josh Allen, the cheat code. You make a stop against that bad offense. You get in the field goal range. You win the game. You control your destiny. I don't hate it that they went for it. I don't hate the play call. It was there if Allen makes the connection with the receiver in the end zone. But I probably would have went and played overtime. I think overtime is fine. Everyone's so scared of overtime. Both teams get a possession. You get to dial it back a little bit. You don't have the pressure of being on a short field right outside of the end zone. I didn't love the call. I didn't hate the call. I just wouldn't have done that if I was Sean McDermott. All right, next clip coming up here in Night Bites. We'll go to the morning show. Jensen Lewis, Dave Ross, they got you covered every single morning. The boys from 7 a.m. to Eastern time right here on VSiN. They had Marnie Herney on, former NFL GM, and he discussed what's going on right now in Charm City with the Baltimore Ravens.
You look at everything they've gone through, and this really defines the NFL as far as, you know, it's a battle of attrition every year, and you just have to hang in there. And everything the Ravens have been through, they have a chance. Listen, everybody came in, thought they're going to be the first seed, get the bye. They're not. But guess what? They have a real chance to get the 4 seed, a home game. Mm. And really, with everything that they've gone through, be in great shape. And I think that that's what's great about this league is I know personally, I had counted the Ravens out weeks ago. They're coming back, and I have to give them the edge this weekend against the Steelers. They just seem to be on a roll.
Yeah, call ready to steal from Money Moves. Call me crazy. I think Pittsburgh's the way to bet that 1+3.5. They have no offense. I hate their defense. I think Pittsburgh's a terrible football team. I don't like the vibes with Baltimore. I'm hearing a lot of people on the network touting Baltimore as a team that's quote-unquote just going to turn it on. Well, what do you mean? They've had several opportunities to turn it on, and the light switch is still off, and it's dim in the room. I have not seen anything from Baltimore that leads me to believe they're going to turn it on when it matters here. Feels like a dysfunctional organization that's cracking at the top with John Harbaugh, where his messaging just isn't wearing the same way it has on the players in the past. I am not buying Baltimore figuring it out against Pittsburgh in this spot. Sure, they win the game, but I don't know if they're covering more than a field goal. This feels like a 3-point game on the road at Acrisure, prime time in the cold. Who even knows if Lamar's going to play? I lean Pittsburgh. I love the under. I bet the under. We'll talk about that a little bit later. And then finally, Night Bites. We're going to go to a numbers game where two fine gentlemen, Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, they join you every day 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern time right here from Circa. And they started looking at the Coach of the Year market, and one guy jumped out to them, as Gil and Kelly discussed, in Kyle Shanahan.
I just think in an extremely splintered coach of the year vote, because there is going to be tons of guys getting votes. Mm-hmm. In an extremely splintered coach of the year vote, I wonder if those injuries, if they win on Saturday, let me preface it by saying that, and they get the number one seed. If they don't, he probably doesn't get it. Is that stupid? It is, but it probably comes down to that. But if Shanahan and the Niners get the number one seed, I think in a splintered vote, that's about as sure of a handicap that there's going to be five or six of them that vote for him just on those on that injury list alone.
Yeah, I get where Gil's coming from. The problem with that is, if you threw a name at me in this market and said, can they win coach of the year? You know what my answer is? Yes. Mike Vrabel, the favorite at -$2? Yes. Kyle Shanahan at 2.5 to 1? Yes. Mike McDonald, 7 to 1? Yes. Liam Cohen, 12 to 1? Yes. Ben Johnson, 40 to 1. That jumped to 40 to 1? Absolutely, yes. Sean Payton, 40 to 1? Sure. D'Amico Ryans, yes. Dave Canales, if they win the South, yes, has a case. I think there's like 6-7 guys that can win this award. I don't think it's as easy as Kyle Shanahan gets the one seed and they end up giving him coach of the year. If I'm going to be completely fair here and consistent with my messaging, if I'm going to dock Drake May for an easy schedule, I should also be docking Kyle Shanahan for an easy schedule. And he also still has a franchise quarterback. He has plenty of weapons. And if you're going to take Kyle Shanahan over Mike Vrabel, I understand why you think he should be coach of the year. But to me, Mike Vrabel, when you look at what the Patriots were under Gerard Mayo a year ago, it's not even the same team. He's lifted the floor so high, and who knows, they could go on a run here. Maybe they're better than I think. Maybe the context that I'm holding against Drake May doesn't matter, and he's going to carry them all the way to the Super Bowl. We will see. But in terms of the regular season, Mike Vrabel at -$2, I think it's totally fair. If you wanted to argue Mike McDonald, I would still say Mike Vrabel over him. Now, Liam Cohen is the guy that I think about, but I'm biased. I have Liam Cohen to win this award from the preseason at 11 to 1. But let's be fair. Vrabel, there was an unknown with Drake May, but we all kind of saw there was upside. Kyle Shanahan, we knew what that roster was. A lot of familiar parts, even though they lost a few pieces. Mike McDonald, new quarterback. It was a gutsy call to go from Geno to Sam Darnold. It's worked out. Liam Cohen is doing things with Trevor Lawrence we have never seen him do at the NFL level. He has unlocked the guy that we all compared to John Elway when he came out of Clemson. And because two others had failed, Urban Meyer and Doug Peterson, I think Liam Cohen has a stronger case than Mike McDonald for this award. And Ben Johnson at 40 to 1, I think it's being held against him that Caleb Williams was a number one pick. And it's not being factored in how bad he looked with Matt Eberflus a year ago. And by the way, Ben Johnson, the Bears, have dealt with a bunch of injuries on offense, yet they keep putting up numbers and stats along the way. If I was going to rank this market right now, Vrabel properly number one. I'd go Cohen number two, Shanahan number three, Johnson four, then McDonald. I think McDonald proved last year how good of a coach he was. I mean, they just missed out on the playoffs, so I'm not sure I'm buying that. The Fremont Street Experience is always on, but this New Year's Eve, they're turning it all the way up. Ring in 2026 at Countdown Under the Canopy, happening December 31st all night long. You'll get 6 live concerts on 3 stages featuring Robin Thicke, CeeLo Green, and Chingy. One ticket, one night, just $60, and the party starts at 7 p.m. Grab your tickets now at VegasExperience.com, the Slotzilla box office, or at any gate location on December 31st. Should Tyler Shuck actually be in the mix for Offensive Rookie of the Year? I'll explain why another quarterback is a better bet next.
Welcome back to Cashing Out here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Dustin Sweetelson hanging out with you all night long from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Always broadcasting on SiriusXM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSiN Watch app, and radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. A lot's happened tonight on the program, including a Monday Night Football game where the Rams lost on the road to Atlanta as 7.5, 8.5-point favorites. Atlanta grabs the dub, 27-24. And with that, we've seen a lot of concern come in the MVP market with Matthew Stafford, with the NFC, and people not really buying into the Rams right now. But the question Is there anyone you really love? Is there anyone you can buy into? We'll discuss right now some teams, some bets that I think do make some sense after the dust has settled when it comes to week 17 and week 18 is upon us. And we'll do that with Dead or Alive. All right, let's get started here. As I alluded to earlier in the show, right now for Offensive Rookie of the Year, I have a few bets in this market. Like, I try to be transparent about the losses that are going to happen and whether I'm going to be underwater in the black or the red when it comes to betting on a specific market. That's how I look at it. When I commit to a market, it's can I be profitable here and by how much? And at the end, we look at the whole of the season and how we do. In the futures market, I usually do pretty well. Now, losing out on Matthew Stafford 55-1 for MVP, that might really hurt the chances here. But we've got Schlesinger for Defensive Rookie of the Year that's going to cash thanks to our buddy Bobby Stanley. And it appears that Tyler Shuck, who I bet on draft night, 60-1. To be Offensive Rookie of the Year, does have a chance to win the award. Let's pull that tweet back up if we can, guys. As back on April 25th, second round of the NFL draft is going on. I'm reacting to it live on VSiN Live on Mad Dog Sports Radio with Patrick Maher. And I say, screw it. Shuck gets drafted to the New Orleans Saints. And I say, you know what? I'm betting him 60-1. DraftKings at the time had 12-1. I don't even like Tyler Shuck. But if he gets to play right away, it's worth a flyer with the discrepancy in odds at two different books from 60-1 to 12-1. And all season long, I didn't really think this would come to fruition. I didn't think this bet would be realized. And then all of a sudden, Tyler Shuck starts starting in place of Spencer Rattler. And now in the market, he's your second shot on the board. For a brief couple hours today, he was your favorite, an odds-on favorite, at like minus 115. Teteroro McMillan is now back to being your favorite at minus 135. Shuck is plus 140. And the problem is where I stand with my 60-1 ticket is I don't know if Tyler Shuck can win this award. So in terms of dead or alive tickets, I wouldn't do anything with Shuck at plus 140. But to me, there's another quarterback that I think there is a much stronger case for Offensive Rookie of the Year. And I don't understand why the case isn't louder for one Jackson Dart, who right now at FanDuel is 22-1 to be your Offensive Rookie of the Year. Tyler Shuck has started 8 games. Jackson Dart has started 11. Dart's completed 63% of his passes, Shuck 67.8. Dart's thrown for 157 a game, 35 rushing yards per game, and Shuck has thrown for 212.5 yards per game. You combine what Dart's done on the ground with his passing, they're pretty similar there, but this is what matters to me, and that's scoring and touchdowns. And right now, Jackson Dart has 22 total touchdowns to Tyler Shuck's 9. 11 total for Shuck. 9 passing, 2 rushing, 13 passing, 9 rushing for Jackson Dart. So it's 22-11, and they both have thrown 5 interceptions. The reason Shuck is getting a lot of pub is because New Orleans is 5-3 in his starts, and Jackson Dart's 3-8. And I don't think that should matter when it comes to Offensive Rookie of the Year. It's who's better. And I think if you watch them play, Jackson Dart is better than Tyler Shuck. I like Tyler Shuck. I think he's done a lot of nice things. Again, I bet him at 60-1. I'd love for him to win this award. I'm not so sure at 22-1 Jackson Dart is out of this yet. I think he has a chance. What if he has a monster performance to finish the season for the Giants this week? And he's coming off a game against Las Vegas where he ran for 2 touchdowns. So he's continuing to add to the stats here. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities that at the end of the day, we could be looking at a spot where Jackson Dart could win Offensive Rookie of the Year at 20-1 because it's a very underwhelming field. Tet McMillan at minus 135, he was minus $3 at one point. I would tell you at minus $3, at minus 135, I don't understand the case you're making, okay? I don't get it. There is nothing that's been dominant about him to be such a heavy favorite. And I like to look at the season as a whole. I know a lot of times from a betting perspective, a lot of people are prisoner of the moment, get caught up in what's happened most recently. I don't value it that way. I think an early start by Emeka Egbuka, that still plays a role just because he's tailed off some. If he has a great game in prime time where Tampa Bay could win their division against Carolina, could he pass Tet McMillan to win this award? I don't think that's out of the realm of possibilities. Back up to 16-1, which, by the way, is the number I bet on right before the season started. And then Travion Henderson probably makes sense as well. But if I'm betting anyone in this market, I think Jackson Dart, 22-1 over at FanDuel or at Boyd Sports, that is the direction I'm looking. I believe that ticket is absolutely alive. You tell me, dead or alive, at VSiN Live, at Dustin Sweetelson. All right, next up here, let's look at the coach of the year market. I think this number's kind of crazy. I touched on it briefly a moment ago, but I can't believe Ben Johnson is back up to being 40 to 1 now. It was 20 to 1 when I sent this graphic in. 40 to 1 for coach of the year. It's likely Vrabel. It's probably rightfully Vrabel. But let's be clear about what Ben Johnson has done. And more importantly, what Ben Johnson is as a coach has been revealed by how the Lions have played without him when it matters the most, how they can't put away the best teams, how they don't have plays in their back pocket to put them over the top in critical spots of all these matchups. And now for the Chicago Bears, they're able to hang with everyone. I think that's what jumps out to me. This Bears team was not competitive the last few years, but more importantly, last year, Caleb Williams' rookie year, he was not making the plays he's making right now. And that's because Ben Johnson has adapted to Caleb Williams' skill set. Not only does he put him in position to be successful in a clean pocket where the play is what it's supposed to be run as, but he's adapted this offense in a way where it allows Caleb to go off script, to do what he does best. And because of the way they're playing, if they finish as the two seed, I don't think it's crazy for Chicago with the jump they made from a year ago and how Caleb has grown and some of the injuries that they've dealt with that Ben Johnson shouldn't be your coach of the year. Would I bet it right now? Probably not. But at the same time, I don't think it's crazy for him to be in the mix for coach of the year. Now, when we look at the teams, I'm going to throw two AFC teams at you right now, because in the betting market in the AFC, I think it's anyone's game. And the Los Angeles Chargers are 9.5 to 1 to win the AFC. I think that's a little bit long. Actually, it's 12 to 1. Why is it 12 to 1? Hold on. I'm seeing 12 to 1 at DraftKings right now. Let's be very clear. I'm looking at this playoff picture. And as it stands right now, the Rams, the Chargers are the sixth seed. So that means 2 plays 7. That's New England versus Buffalo, Chargers versus Jacksonville. But the Chargers aren't playing their starters this week. And they should lose to Denver, who would lock up the one seed, which means that the Chargers would likely drop below the Bills should the Bills win this week. And they would be the seventh seed, which means they would take on New England, a New England team that has not played a difficult schedule, that has not really played a defense like the Chargers. And Jim Harbaugh as a coach, he will give Mike Vrabel everything that he can handle. I don't think it's crazy the Chargers, even though they're a warm weather team, to go to Foxborough in the postseason and pull off a crazy upset against a team that hasn't been tested, because Drake May in that offense, while he has been amazing, I understand he's your favorite for MVP. You know I've been hating on it all day long, but I can acknowledge that he's had a great season. He'd be going up against a defense in the Chargers that's 7th in EPA right now in the NFL. They are a very, very difficult defense to move the football against, and their offense wants to play in low possession games. They want to use that play clock. They want to extend drives. They want to run the football. It's difficult to do it against New England, but I expect that being a low-scoring game with both defenses dominating, and because of that, it comes down to who can make plays in the fourth quarter. We'll see. I think Drake May has the ability to be better than Justin Herbert, but on one given day, there is a world where Justin Herbert gets the best of him and pulls off an upset. And I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. Once they do that, the Chargers continue to roll and could potentially win the AFC. Likely not, but at 12 to 1, if they can reach the AFC title game, that's a ticket you hedge against all day long. And then also in the AFC, what about Jacksonville at 5.5 to 1? I don't think the defense is being hyped up enough. They are right now number 7 in EPA per play. Jacksonville is your 3 seed in the AFC as of right now, which means that 2 plays 7, 6 plays 3, they would likely get the Buffalo Bills. That could be tough, but you know, with Jacksonville's defense and those weapons, I think they're really formidable. I mean that in a complimentary way. Jacoby Myers with Brenton Strange, Brian Thomas Jr., Parker Washington's emerged as like the go-to guy for Trevor Lawrence. The run game's very solid. There's a world where that defense makes it so low scoring, they only have to make a few plays on offense, and Liam Cohen seems to have plays in his back pocket when he needs them the most. I don't think they're crazy. And then lastly, the last bet I want to bring up here, what about Philly to win the NFC? Philly's plus 460. Look, the defense number 6 in EPA per play. Absolutely loaded with Vic Fangio. It's a Super Bowl caliber defense. The problem becomes the offense, where right now the Philadelphia Eagles can't be trusted, as you've got Jalen Hurts coming off a game where he didn't throw for any yardage in the second half, but they did just win a Super Bowl. Could they figure it out with a playoff format where things change stylistically? I don't know if I'm ready at 4.5 to 1, but something to ponder there. We will attack the bowl game set for Tuesday, plus some college hoops on the other side of cashing out.
VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back at it. It's Cashing Out VSIN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. I appreciate you making us a part of your night, however you may be tuning in. SiriusXM Channel 158, YouTube TV, the VSIN Watch app, radio affiliates across the United States of God Bless America. We've covered a lot of ground today. If you missed any part of the program, reacting to the MVP market shifts in hour number one, coming off of Monday Night Football, Wes Reynolds earlier this hour, Jeff Erickson in hour number two, along with Zachary Cohen, discussing that Nikola Jokic injury and how it impacts the MVP market, what we could do there. Go back and download the show wherever you get your podcast. But right now, it's time to look ahead to Tuesday. It's jam-packed, it's jelly tight, and it's time for our VSIN Morning Bets segment. Before we get to some of the bowl games on Tuesday, I want to add some of the college football playoff bets that I put up at VSIN.com/picks earlier today. Let's start with, first of all, I've had under 42.5 with Miami and Ohio State up there for a little bit. That number's down to 40.5 at this point. I think about 9.5 in the Cotton Bowl, taking it with the Hurricanes in that spot. But I still prefer the under. I think both defenses show up. It's going to be a low-scoring game. There's probably a world where it's like 20 to 10, something like that in that range. So I don't love the side as much as I love the under in that game. Now, I did add Oregon money line against Texas Tech. That's as much a hedge on my 19-1 Red Raiders national title future as it is backing Oregon in this spot. I just think Dan Lanning, having been in these positions before, been in a lot of big games, and I think Oregon's more battle-tested than they're giving credit for. Their one loss is at home to Indiana, and somehow they're being docked for that when, last time I checked, Indiana's number one in the nation heading into the playoff. They are your top team right now in the country. Sure, they lost by 10 at home, but everyone can learn from that. That was also following a double overtime win on the road in Happy Valley against Penn State, which essentially got James Franklin fired. I think Oregon being a bit more battle-tested and also having to play in the Big Ten, where they're used to some of these opponents, where they had to go on the road at Penn State and win. They had to go to Iowa, which is a very difficult place to play, and win. They beat USC at home, right? They had to go to Washington. Tell me, what scares you about the Red Raiders? I mean this with all due respect. The Big 12 is still a tick below the other leagues, if we're being totally fair. I know a lot of you in Texas and Oklahoma don't love hearing that, but I just think it's reality. Who did they beat? Utah, number 16 in the country. BYU twice. BYU is an okay, solid football team. I think Oregon was way more battle-tested, and I trust Dante Moore in a big spot here. I think he steps up. I think he's learned a lot. There's a lot on the line for him, and they've got a really good run game. Red Raiders, best run defense in the country, but context matters. Who is that up against? Oregon's pretty good in their own right, defending the run. They're also fifth against the pass. I think it's going to be tough for Texas Tech to move the football as well. I like the under 51.5, but I also hedge that Texas Tech future with Oregon on the money line at minus 128. And then finally, a couple other bets. Maybe I'm getting too cute here. Bama plus 7.5 against Indiana. I might be falling for the okey-doke that, you know, it's the Alabama Crimson Tide, and I'm seeing them as they were under Nick Saban. But the reality is, I love Indiana. I was on the over win total. I love Kurt Cignetti and what they've done. But the fact of the matter is, I think the entire product is watered down. And because of that, Indiana may be number one. I don't know how much there is with separation between them and 2, 3, 4, 5, all the way down to like 12. They are the best team in the country. They have earned the right to be the best team in the country. I just think Alabama can keep it close. And I think there is a disparity between the SEC and Big Ten. I know people in the middle of the country, again, will not like that I'm saying that. You're all very defensive when anyone says an evaluation that they have no heart in. Like, I have no investment in this other than I think Alabama can cover this number in this bet. But I do think the SEC and the play that you go through there is a bit more physical than what Indiana dealt with this season. I don't think Indiana's schedule was quite as daunting. And for Alabama, I expect Kalen DeBoer, who's a great coach in his own right, to figure it out when it matters, especially knowing he's committed to this situation. I think Indiana has some really good wins this year. Illinois was a great win. They beat them. Going to Iowa, quality win. Going to Oregon was insane. Massive win. And then later in the year, taking down Ohio State in the Big Ten title game. Awesome win, 13-10. Are we so sure, though, that Indiana, coming off that win against Ohio State by a field goal, that this number of 7, a full touchdown against the Crimson Tide, that isn't an overreaction to the Buckeyes' win? How good are the Buckeyes? We don't know. There's no way to quantify that because not everyone plays everyone in college football. Because of that, I took 7.5 with Alabama. If you can get that, I love that. I like 7. I obviously love 7.5. I think this game stays within a touchdown. I think Indiana wins, but I do think it's a touchdown game based on the talent. And then finally, we're going Ole Miss plus 3.5, first half against Georgia. I don't think Ole Miss can hang for 4 quarters, but I do think there's a chance Georgia gets off to a slow start. Pete Golden is in his bag early with that defense, limiting Gunnar Stockton, and the offense finds a way to keep it close for a half, and then second half, Georgia pulls away. So I took the Rebs plus 3.5. Now, we do have some games on Tuesday when it comes to college football. So let's begin looking at these bowl games. Independence Bowl, Coastal and Louisiana Tech. Tech laying 10, total of 49.5. You know, Coastal fired their head coach, Tim Beck. D.C. Jeremiah Johnson is their interim head coach. Bunch of injuries. Quarterback Samari Collier missed the final 2 games with a knee injury. Tad Hudson may be starting in his spot. They have a bunch of injuries. Left tackle, corner, linebacker, a couple safeties. And then La Tech. They have 2 safeties that are transferring out. They have a linebacker and a corner transferring out. Trey Kukoc is expected to start. Started the last 2 games of the season after Blake Baker got hurt for Louisiana Tech. I kind of like under 49.5, but I'm staying away there. Music City Bowl, give me Illinois and the 3.5 points. I'm taking the dog in this spot. Total 61.5, but Tennessee fired their defensive coordinator, Tim Banks. So their linebacker coach is going to fill in for him, William Inge. They also lost Boo Carter at cornerback to go with Colton Hood, who's going to prepare for the draft. Jermod McCoy has been out all year. He's going to be a first-round pick at corner. I think that defense for Tennessee is very susceptible here. And Luke Altmaier is going to play at quarterback for the Fighting Illini. So I like Illinois and the points. I lean over 61.5, but I like Illinois and the points better. I think they're going to be able to hang with Tennessee every step of the way there. Alamo Bowl features USC and TCU. USC laying 6.5, total of 55.5. The big story is at quarterback. Josh Hoover for TCU is transferring. Ken Seals is going to start in his stead. Jaden Maiava is going to play at quarterback for SC. I laid the 6.5 with USC. It feels chalky. It feels obvious, which usually ends up blowing up in your face. But I think in this instance, USC gets it done. Number 7 passing offense in the country. Going up against TCU, who is 8th, but they don't have their quarterback. And Josh Hoover is going to get it paid a lot in the transfer portal market. So I laid the 6.5 with USC. College basketball now. Let me find my notes here. I'm a mess. I like a few games on the card. Let's begin looking at Florida State and North Carolina. The key in this one for me is Florida State allows a ton of free throw attempts per game. They're 259th in that regard. They also don't shoot the 3 very well, 31.4% from beyond the arc. I can only look at UNC in this spot. I think North Carolina could cover a big number. That's just a lean, though, because it's the opening of ACC play, and I'm just a bit concerned that when we get into conference play that they could keep it close, Florida State on the road. But I do think North Carolina at minus 14.5 would be the way I'd look there. Louisville's at Cal. I thought about taking the 7.5 with Cal. I lean Cal plus 7.5, but the problem is Louisville's been battle-tested. They have wins over Kentucky, Memphis, Indiana, and Cincy. Cal, when you look at the schedule, just a win over UCLA. But Cal metrically looks pretty good. 13th in three-point percentage at 39.6%. They're also pretty good defending the 3, holding opponents to 29.8%. Louisville's awesome. I mean, they got Ryan Conwell, the transfer from Xavier, hitting almost 40% of his 3s, almost 20 points per game. Mikel Brown Jr., 16.6 points per game. They're loaded. Mark Madsen, 5-3 against the spread as a home dog at Cal. Pat Kelsey, 6-3 against the spread as a road favorite as Louisville. So there's trends that back both sides here. But I like Cal plus the 8. I'm just not going to get home with it. Seton Hall and Marquette. I laid 2 with Seton Hall in this game. You know, Seton Hall is pretty battle-tested. They played NC State, K-State, Rutgers, Providence. They lost to Villanova. Marquette's on a 4-game losing streak. They've lost every single test they've had this year. Indiana, Maryland, Oklahoma, Wisconsin, Purdue, Georgetown, and Creighton. Marquette's just not good offensively. 284th in three-point percentage. They're 259th in two-point percentage. They're 220th in free throw percentage, and they allow a ton. They're going to take on a Seton Hall team that isn't amazing shooting the three, but they're better than Marquette. Shaheen Holloway is 4-1 against the spread as a road favorite at Seton Hall, 2-0 against the spread as a road favorite or six or less. Give me Seton Hall minus the 2 points there. I also took Pitt plus 10.5, taking on Miami. I just thought that was a lot of points, and I like Miami. I think they're a little under the radar right now. KenPom has them 35th in the country. Miami's on a six-game win streak. They have wins over Georgetown, Ole Miss, losses to BYU and Florida. Pitt's played a lot of weird games. They beat Ohio State and Penn State, but lost to Quinnipiac, UCF, West Virginia, Hofstra, A&M, and Nova. But I kind of like Jeff Capel here. 14-11 against the spread as a road dog of 6.5 to 12 points. They're catching 10.5 in this spot. I think they can keep it close with Miami there. And I think that will do it for all my bets when it comes to college hoops. I'll add some more, some NBA player props. They'll be up throughout the day over at VSiN.com/picks. Well, that'll do it for us here on Cashing Out. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. I appreciate you hanging out with us, but stay with VSiN all day long. It gets started at 7 a.m. Eastern. VSiN by the books, followed by a numbers game. And then you got prop points with the guru, John Hansen. I'm Dustin Sweetelson. We'll see you next time on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.